tyranny, forged by freedom. That's what made us the greatest nation this world has known. We must resurrect that spirit to preserve liberty for ourselves and our posterity. This is Revolution's Revival. And now, your host, the cigar-smoking, politically incorrect, patriot of the hour, Caleb Shoemate.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of Revolution's Revival. I'm your host, Caleb Shoemate, and today I have a bit of a radical on with me, my friend Shane Hazel. And I think that's a pretty appropriate name, don't you, Shane, given that your podcast is named Radical?
Yeah, I guess that's probably why I chose it. I mean, in the day and age where, you know, guys, you were talking about peace, liberty, and free markets and you know, people's rights, man. It's we're being labeled that by Brennan and Clapper and the rest of the progressives out there. And you know, it's one of those things where, hey, shoe fits, wear it good. If all of those things in terms of principle are radical, then so am I.
Right, and I think that fits you like a slipper, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, very much so.
So tell me, you are a bit of an election spoiler, according to the two major parties. Well, what's up with that? What's up with the Senate race in Georgia that you?
Well, you know, Democrats are paying you that big money. You know, you just gotta take one for the team. No, obviously, I saw both David Perdue and John Ossoff down here as major progressives. And for maybe your audience that doesn't know, you know, David Perdue. He's got had a 20% constitutional voting record in 2020. And, you know, his overall constitutional voting record was a 45 or 46 somewhere. And I mean, that's not acceptable when you're a student, when you're trying to get, you know, grades. It's not acceptable when you go to work every day, if you're only doing your job 40% of the time, not to mention 20% of the time in the last year. And, you know, per Article 6, Section 3 of the Constitution, he wasn't upholding his oath to protect and defend, you know, your rights and my rights first and foremost, and then keep that government within those boundaries set forth by the framers, you know, secondly. And so when I saw, you know, this race, I was like, man, we've got two huge races down here. Obviously, we had Kelly Loeffler versus Warnock. And that was, you know, what they call the jungle primary and all that nonsense. So that was going down at the same time as ours. And so to have two U.S. Senate seats up for grabs at the same time, I knew this was going to be a absolutely, huge, huge race, to be able to send it to a runoff, because you knew the jungle primary is going to a runoff, and having the entire nation at this point in our history, you know, waiting on what was going to happen in Georgia in the beginning of January is like, we'd be silly not to do this. So yeah, I mean, you know, I convinced a lot of people out there that Perdue was kind of a scumbag, and you know, it just took the truth. You know, it wasn't mudslinging, it was just reporting his record. And you know, then asking the fair question, would you ever support Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as a quote unquote conservative? And you know, people who were honest said, hell no, I wouldn't ever support her. And I said, well, guess what? She does her job more of the time than David Perdue does. She's got an overall 49% constitutional voting record. So She beats your quote unquote conservative Republican out of Georgia. And she's from the Bronx in New York in terms of her constitutional voting record, man. Hell no. Right. And like, that's the thing is, like, when people found out, we had our one little debate on PBS down here. And then Rand Paul came on my show, Radical, to tell me basically that there's no real damn difference between, you know, the Republican establishment and the Democrat establishment. And the only thing that he could point to in terms of, you know, favorability for Perdue was Rand Paul himself, in terms of giving him, you know, more, I don't know, clout and you know, more say in the Senate. It's like, man. Nobody, you know, Joe Biden isn't going to listen to you. Kamala Harris isn't going to listen to you. Absolutely. You know, the Democrats are not going to listen to you. You might as well just put the onus for the next 4 years on their shoulders alone. And hey, then at least you can sit there and play the big bad Republicans for a while. Like you're hard on debt and you're good on rights and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know, but that's what went down here. Obviously I wasn't on the ballot for the runoff, so it was really just a failed candidate in terms of David Perdue versus John Ossoff and the Democratic machine. And they whipped his ass. I mean, that's just what it came down to.
Yeah. So much for failed libertarians. You polled what, over 2%? And they wasn't spending a dime.
Yeah. I didn't spend a dime on this election. And we ended up getting about 115,000 votes down here. It was about 2.3%. And, that's what I asked people all the time. I said, hey, listen, this was a hobby this time around. So if you guys want to invest in liberty, I'll do this full time and I will put together a team and a army to go after the governorship down here in 2022.
So that's the goal from now on is governor, right?
Yeah, we're I'm seeking. I still have to go through the Libertarian Convention, and they'll have anybody who will seek the nomination or be nominated for the nomination, stand before the caucus, and right then and there, we will have our little vote, and the majority will pick. And at the end of the day, man, I hope to be the ambassador for the message of liberty from the Libertarian Party down here in Georgia.
Well, I think you're pretty damn good at that, if I have to say so myself.
Well, I'm flattered, brother.
Yeah, not just trying to toot your horn, but I think that you're one of the most fiery, ambitious people that we've got on the Liberty side.
Oh, it probably has a little something to do with my background in the Marine Corps. And, I'm just that's the thing is, as a kid, man, I really believed in America and, even the government. That's the thing is like, man, the indoctrination was very, very strong where I was at. And I had no reason to disbelieve it, right? I grew up in a pretty safe place, knock on wood. Around me, I saw, people who celebrated the country and people that got along, and you're a child and you're probably fairly insulated for some things, but even still it was, turning into politics, I guess at 13 years old or so, and hearing it on the, AM 750 down here at the time before that, even, I didn't believe a whole lot of bad things about America. I was a neocon. I was one of those people that was the first one to defend the cops and the state. And, if we were going over to somewhere like the Middle East, man, it was Team America, right? Like in 1990, I think I was 10 years old when we went in for Desert Shield and then Desert Storm. And you would have thought, like, especially at my school, like, man, we are on a, on a holy mission. And we need to support these guys and send them letters and care packages and all that kind of stuff. So, right. I mean, it was just the way I grew up.
Well, can you speak on that? Because I think that's very important from the conservative side. They think that supporting these wars, these horrible wars, is supporting the troops. And I argue that, from a pro-life standpoint, being a pro-lifer, you can't consistently be pro-life and support these god-awful wars all the time.
As a Marine combat vet, I was in First Force Reconnaissance Company as a point man from 02 through almost 06 and did two deployments for the initial invasion into Iraq. And then the second time around was in 04. So it turned right around after the first 5 months over there and went back in April of 04. We got into Kuwait and took over from the Army in Najaf August of 04. And that's when, that night, man, the Battle of Najaf kicked off. And that was a big battle. It was the biggest battle I have ever seen at the point. Right. You had tanks and gunships, helos and, fixed wing aircraft and artillery. And it was unbelievable to witness. We went after Muqtada al-Sadr and those guys down there. I did a bunch of direct action. Rounded up a whole bunch of Muqtada al-Sadr's lieutenants and a few raids with like the ODA guys. I think it was 5th Group that I was working with down there at the time. And then we got called in to do the reconnaissance for the north side of the city, up there for Fallujah, and, you know, late October going into the, you know, round two, November, fight for that. And then, so we did that and we got in, with 3-1 and 1-3 infantry units, because of our captain. They took a lot of heavy losses in the initial stages of the invasion and all that fun stuff. And, you know, and that, I mean, Najaf was peanuts compared to what Fallujah was. And, you know, later, 2 months later, basically, for us, and to see the, I mean, just the amount of firepower and death and destruction and, you know, the, what the American military can bring, you're just like, this is insanity. So I saw that, man. And I saw some things not adding up while I was over there. And I, you know, specifically like when we, you know, were going to go in and, you know, basically destroy the Mahdi militia in Najaf, with some air strikes at the Imam Ali Shrine. I mean, like they called it all off. They brokered a peace deal with, the Grand Ayatollah Sistani at the time and Muqtada al-Sadr, and they, you know, got out of there. They left all the Marines that had been fighting, had lost, you know, some of their best friends, man, you know, guys they consider brothers. They had to watch these guys walk out of that shrine with, you know, nothing in their hands. You know, they left and stashed things down in the catacombs and tunnels and all that kind of stuff, and basically just let them go. And I was like, this isn't war, man. This is weird. You know, this is like, yeah, this is something, there's a lot of politics going on here. We thought we were there to help the Shiites, which that was Muqtada al-Sadr and the Mahdi militia. Right. And you know, you end up fighting them, and then you're up north chasing al-Zarqawi and his guys, you know, all over the, you know, western, you know, Iraq and into Syria and all that fun stuff. And you're just like, you know, like we've got very mixed intelligence. We've got very mixed signals. If you're any type of, you know, like if you got a brain and you're questioning what's going on, you just kind of saw that kind of stuff. And then I found John Taylor Gatto, God bless him and rest him. He wrote Weapons of Mass Destruction. And I read that after the Battle of Fallujah, at the Mech up there, which is the base. And it basically started talking about the indoctrination of America, and how it was based on the Prussian system to get people to, you know, be, you know, these diehards for the state. And I was just like, wow, man, like if you can create, you know, people that absolutely, you know, fawn and love and will die for their country based on lies, you know, then what you have is a ready and willing army to sacrifice everything to perpetuate the state and not so much perpetuate liberty. And boy, to have that moment after, you know, two deployments and those battles and everything else. I mean, we were getting close to getting out of there in February, but I still had 2 months left, and I was sitting there just like, that's a hell of a thing to start wrestling with, you know, when you still have combat operations ahead of you. Like, it's really, really messed up.
I'm sure that's something that really weighs on somebody's conscience once you figure out the games. And unfortunately, it is a game to these politicians, but it's not with us. It's not with your average people. I mean, people fight and they die, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, when you see you know, people that you were just having, you know, breakfast with, you know, zipped up into a bag and sent home, and you know, his men, and like, I mean, you know, very specifically, there was a Lieutenant Blackburn. You know, one morning we were all together sitting in what was, you know, basically the line of departure. And by that night, man, that guy was gone. And you're just sitting there going like, wow, dude, like that's insane. Like, it, you know, for a young life like that, a guy that, you know, played football at Annapolis, and, you know, to think that we're over there making America more free or safe, it's just the most, I don't know. It speaks to what the indoctrination system is. And that is an absolute, you know, 13 years, sometimes longer, depending on how fast you get through that indoctrination. You know, how good it works and how long it's, you know, takes to undo things like that. Cause I mean, it literally took me, you know, probably a good 10 years, you know, after I got out to really, really see the other side of the field and know that, you know, the anti-federalists from, you know, the Constitutional Convention, man, those are my guys, man. And, you know, to not understand that until 2015, 2016, you know, that's a lot of undoing.
It is. And sometimes it does take time. It really does. To unlearn the lies, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right.
But with that indoctrination and all the constitutional misunderstanding and the misunderstanding of the proper place of natural rights, I think that's a good segue for the meat of the conversation. And that's for 127. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean... it's an abomination, man. I like to start off by just, you know, reminding everybody, you know, one of the things that I did in my path to where I'm at is basically memorize the Constitution, right? And understand the mechanics and how it functions to, so that I can have these discussions with anybody. The Constitution in your state and the Constitution at the federal level were not written and authorized to govern you or the citizenry.
Absolutely.
They were written and authorized to lend power to a body of people to do very specific enumerated things, right?
Right.
And if you don't stay in that framework, it's unconstitutional. If you go outside of that, you are absolutely in dereliction of that contract, and that contract is then void. That contract is there to govern the government and to make sure that they understand their boundaries and what they can and cannot do, right? And what they've done is turn that on its head and use it as a tool to now, you know, a perverted, bastardized tool at that, to, you know, obviously permit our rights back to us, license our rights back to us, trample them completely, like HR 127 here is proposing. And I mean, the list of what this thing is, man, it's the most tyrannical piece of Overton window shit that I've ever seen. Like, it is terrible. Absolutely.
For those of you who don't know, I did a podcast on HR 127, and I went into depth about what that would look like, and it would set up a national gun registry. It would make firearm ownership in this country practically illegal.
I mean, on arbitrary understandings, right? Like complete. I mean, some of the you won't be able to get a quote unquote license, right? If you are evaluated to be mentally unfit, if you've ever been diagnosed with depression, if you have ever had any brain disease, I mean, if you ever had an alcohol problem, or I imagine anything else for that matter.
Right.
Those things alone just mean gun ownership's over.
Well, and talk about your experience from the military. I mean, you have people come back with PTSD all the time, and they struggle with things. Those people need help.
But well, and the thing is that's just life, right?
They supposedly go fight for this country to defend our rights, and now you're telling me they can't exercise their rights?
Yeah, when they come back, now they're monsters, right? They're mentally unfit. They have post-traumatic stress disorder. Why do you think they started calling it that? I mean, this is the plan all along, right? This is why I never took the VA money and said, "Yo, I got PTSD." Like, no, fuck you guys. I know what you guys are doing, right? Like, you guys aren't going to come at me later on and go, "Oh yeah, you remember when you filed and we gave you all this money for PTSD?" No, you guys can keep your damn. I think it's $4,000 a month, dude. And I mean, you're 100% disabled if you take that. So if you take $4,000 a month, you don't think that stuff comes with some strings? Of course it comes with strings. It's just a matter of time before they start pulling on them. And I'll tell you right now, like that's one of those reasons where I was just like, no, y'all keep your $4,000 a month. I'll live my life without it. I'll be just fine. And, you know, and the thing is, you know, I'll tell you right now, man, like I didn't realize I had some post-traumatic stress until much later on. It's just, you think you know what post-traumatic stress is, and you don't have any idea until you figure it out.
Right. And you know, that's something that I can speak on from, you know, being disabled. I mean, I've had a lot of depression and things like that, but you want to take away my natural right to be able to defend myself?
Yeah.
Let's face it, I'm at a natural disadvantage of being born with cerebral palsy. If they take away my gun ownership, then I'm helpless.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. And I mean, females for the most part, you know, if they encounter a bigger, stronger male, like, what are you doing, people? They know what they're doing. They're creating more victims, you know, so that they can, you know, exercise more authority over more people, because what they like to solve problems, right? So let's create a problem. You know, what's the old adage, right? They'll come in and break your leg and give you the crutches and say, hey, you need to tell us thank you for the crutches, right?
Right.
Get out of here.
And I mean, you can look at that's across the board with any issue. I mean, mm-hmm. They'll come in, they'll use a natural crisis, or like you said, they'll manufacture one just to use it as an excuse as a power grab.
Yeah. The other thing is it's also, I mean, this legislation is also geared to hurt the very people that they claim to protect, right? And that is people that don't have a ton of money. They want you to get insurance, you know, from the government insurance policies, mm-hmm. for $800 per year.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Your average American can't afford $800 per year to own a gun.
Yeah, I know you guys in the government haven't missed a damn paycheck. You, the boys at the ATF and all you bastards that were celebrating the other day with Waco, right? Like, man, it's like, you got to be kidding me. You're going to tell me, like, the people who are out here in this day and age with the government imposed tyranny and lockdowns and restrictions and capacity, you know, like, you're going to sit here and tell us that we need to give you guys more money to exercise a natural right? You guys are out of your mind.
Right. Let me ask you, running for governor, how would you propose to fight this stuff? I mean, other than buy ammo and guns, I mean, we know that, but legislatively, is there a way we can fight this?
Yeah, it's through nullification. And as governor in Georgia, I will tell you right now, first and foremost, I will absolutely commute every sentence of every nonviolent criminal in the state of Georgia. I don't care, you know, if it's drug related, I don't care if it's firearm related. If it was a nonviolent offense where somebody had a suppressor or somebody had an automatic weapon or somebody had a bump stock or somebody had whatever it is in terms of an accessory or a firearm or a weapon, I don't give a damn. As long as it was a nonviolent charge, hey, have fun. Get out of here. Sorry, the draconian state messed up. Now, on terms of enforcement and nullification, here's my order to anybody and everybody in the state of Georgia who has sworn an oath to the Constitution. Every gun law ever passed here in Georgia or anywhere else at the federal level, I don't give a damn, is null right now, period. If you don't like that, find a new profession. And if you want to enforce it, I'm going to come after you with U.S. Code 242, which is deprivation of rights under color of law. You are not going to deprive the citizens of Georgia their natural right of self-preservation. You got to be freaking kidding me. This is what we signed up to do.
I talk about that all the time. You know, as someone who has CP, it literally is my right to preserve my own liberty. And there are people, even today, the whole progressive ideology is to eliminate what they see as the unfit. So that's people like myself, that's minorities, people of color, anybody you want to paint across this. And gun control has always been racist.
Yeah.
I mean, to paint this over on, you know, people who naturally lean on the state, I'm like, do you not see that they're playing you for a fool here? They don't care, and they want to divide us. And it really bothers me.
How are you going to enforce a drug war in an urban area, right? Like, take it from a guy who's fought through urban areas. How are you going to enforce a drug war in an urban area with dudes that have the means to arm themselves? That's part of what happened up there in, what was it, Philadelphia, right? The more bombing, I always forget the name of it. But at any rate, it was a people who were basically living with each other, and they went in there and they slaughtered them, right? Like, they killed five kids on top of it. This is the U.S. government, right? They, for the war on drugs and the state cathedral, they think that they can strip people's guns away and then they can go into neighborhoods in urban areas especially, and harass and point guns at and cage and kill peaceful people. Mm-hmm. It's so messed up, man. So as governor, man, that stuff ends right here and right now. And it has all the teeth in the world. And I'll tell you right now, I know some pretty good lawyers down here who are liberty people. And I'll tell you right now, you want to talk about taking this all the way, I don't give a damn anymore. Like we're here to make sure that the people and their rights are recognized first and foremost and upheld. Like this is where I think the nation's hotspot might be in 2022, because the national government's going to hate me.
Right. And that's a good sign to me.
Yeah.
When we are labeled as domestic terrorists, to me, that is a good sign, because I tell people all the time, King George labeled the founders as domestic terrorists. So when you talk about domestic terrorism, who is the one that's doing the labeling?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and seriously, for a bunch of people that don't believe in fences and walls and all that kind of stuff, man, it's real, real crazy that on day one, there was what, like 65,000 troops with a couple different layers of fence and perimeters and cordon zones. Like, seriously, they called it the fucking green zone in D.C. We have a green zone in America now?
Like, uh-huh.
I mean, the last time I was in a green zone was on foreign soil where people were trying to kill me.
Right.
And I was wrong for being there.
And what do you say to the people who are detractors who would say that, what are you going to do when the government comes against you with tanks? You think your little AR-15 is going to stop the tanks and the soldiers? What do you say to those people?
If people haven't been paying attention to the quote-unquote war on terror overseas, people have zero communications, living in dirt huts that have wiped out the U.S. empire, that have wiped out the Russian empire, that wiped out the Ottoman empire, that wiped out the Indian empire. Mm-hmm. Like when you look at the Peshmerga and that whole region in Afghanistan, like those guys have crushed the biggest empires ever on earth with very rudimentary weapons and skills and maneuvers. I mean, you're not going to win in a country with this much communication, with this much technology, with this many veterans, combat vets at that, who are sick and tired of this, with probably close to a trillion? No, I'm sorry. Is it 500 million? Close to a billion firearms and countless rounds of ammunition. Plus, on top of that, when you look at, well, they got tanks and they got, you know, helicopters. Like, listen, you want to talk, I mean, seriously, drones, lasers, all the heavy equipment, the farm equipment, the construction equipment, like, we're okay. They have regiments and battalions. We have legions.
Right.
And we are fighting for something far, far more precious than what they're fighting for. What are they fighting for? They're fighting to make sure that they still get a paycheck by living off of us. What are we fighting for? We're fighting for our families and our rights and our neighbors. Like, that's a hell of a that's a motivator, right? Like, that's a powerful, powerful thing. You're not going to haul people off. You're not going to, you know, disappear them. You're not going to put them in train cars. You're not going to do any of that bullshit that happened over in Germany. That shit stops now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is something that people overlook. I mean, you look at the American Revolution, it lasted what, close to 10 years, like 7-8 years? Yep. And we were farmers.
Farmers and craftsmen.
The militia is what won the war, not the organized army.
That's right.
And they,
the organized army was getting their ass handed to them because they were fighting like an organized army.
Right.
We're not going to fight like that.
I sit and I think about it, and I think, you know, how many of the people that claim they're for liberty are willing to do this? Because if we're willing to do this, there's no way they can beat us.
Now, I'll tell you right now, man, and here's the other thing is, hey, you want to be a conscientious objector and you need a place to go, Georgia is your place.
Right.
As long as you're a man or woman of peace and want nothing more than the American dream, right? Like to live your life and be unmolested by the state through force and coercion. Hey, Georgia's your place. You need to get the hell away from DC. You want to defect, come to Georgia. We'll find something. You know, that's the thing is, and in terms of, you know, things like economy and stuff down here, man, I'll tell you right now, you know, I know this is kind of shifting gears a little bit, but what I'm going to propose to people is, listen, I'm also going to end the war on drugs. They're done. Yeah. Farmers, our agriculture is our biggest industry down here. Grow whatever the hell you want to. I'm not saying you have to grow hemp. I'm not saying you have to grow cannabis, but I'm telling you right now, if you want to, that's fine by us. We don't care. Do whatever you want. And we're going to turn that industry into an absolute, I don't want to say empire industry. I hate the word empire, but we're going to turn it into the biggest growth in terms of natural, sustainable, green energy. Like we're going to be, Georgia's going to be energy independent if I'm governor. And that's going to be the private sector doing what the private sector does, putting forth, you know, biorefineries, growing two bumper crops of, you know, cannabis hemp in a year, right? Like that's enough hemp in terms of biodiesel to run every diesel engine on earth for a year. Right. It's amazing. So we're going to do some amazing things because, you know, obviously the state has, you know, bound our hands and our legs and gagged us and everything else. And we're still, you know, just chugging along over here.
Do you think on the marijuana topic, we'll shift gears just a little bit.
Sure.
On the marijuana topic, do you think the social conservatives will get on board with it? Do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think most of the nation's already there, right? I mean, I think I've even seen like Republican polls like over 80% in terms of legalizing cannabis.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a right. It's a plant. It grows out of the ground.
Yeah.
What are we doing? What are we talking about? You guys are Christians, right? Like if, what is it? Genesis 29?
Yeah. Right.
Genesis 29 talks about every seed bearing plant on this earth is medicine, be it food to your body and everything. Like, guys, live by it. If this is what you're claiming to be, then at least, you know, pay attention to some of these kind of things. And let's recognize that air is air and what grows out of the ground is ours for consumption, you know, and for health and for medicine.
I tell people that all the time, you know, because I was raised in a very socially conservative background. And as a Christian myself, I tell people there's not a thing in this world that God created in and of itself that's bad for you. It's the way.
Yeah, that's like if you believe God doesn't make mistakes, right? This is all by design. You got to have some faith, man.
Right. Listen, right.
It may not be for you, right? It may not be something for you until you're on your deathbed.
Right.
Right. Until you've been diagnosed with something that maybe it helps, like Parkinson's, with IBS, with Crohn's, with Alzheimer's. I mean, ADD with kids, it helps with epileptic seizures. I mean, you're talking about a damn miracle plant that we absolutely know is not a Schedule I drug because the government has their own damn patent on it. Right. And two, because obviously we've seen people doing research outside of government federal control, and it has amazing effects on people in terms of their health. I mean, yeah, that's one of the, it should be one of the biggest eye openers. Like these guys lie about everything for political power and basically money, man. It's sick.
Well, and if they lie to you about cannabis, what else are they lying to you about?
Everything.
Right. And the whole cannabis argument's ridiculous. I mean, that was outdated in what, the 80s at least?
Oh, I would go all the way back to the
20s. Oh yeah. Reefer madness.
Right, because I mean, think throughout history, people have been growing and using it, you know, in medicines and building and you name it. And it's one of those things where, you know, along came a government and said, let's prohibit alcohol, and people revolted over that. I mean, and you know, death for, you know, federal agents and cops and stuff was going through the roof at that time. And so they disbanded and, you know, passed another amendment, Article 5 amendment, and said, hey, no, we're not doing this crap any longer. And then Harry Anslinger enters the damn picture as a out of work bureaucrat from the prohibition of alcohol and says, I'll be your new czar on drugs, basically, right? Let's prohibit this stuff, cannabis, and let's call it marijuana. Make it sound ethnic and, you know, scare everybody about, you know, brown people, and let's start prosecuting these people. And it's so gross.
Prosecute people for the Tijuana tobacco, right?
That's right. The Mexican ditch weed.
Right. I just it sickens me. And for the people that are, you know, the whole Blue Lives Matter, and I've got problems with that myself. But if you really support cops, you know, and I'm not anti-cop, but I am anti-state. And people need to understand, if tyranny ever comes on the people, it's going to be from your cops and your military.
And it's already here.
Yeah. Those are the people that enforce it.
Yeah. When thieves and murderers, and you sit there and you look at, you know, the Nuremberg trials and, you know, follow the law, you know, just do what they say, just obey, right? No, man. Like, just because a legislature passes something and a governor signs it into law, you're the check and balance. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who also swears an oath to that Constitution, you stand on your own 2 feet and you decide one way or another, is this permissible under that contract? If it's not, man, you don't enforce that. You don't go out there and persecute peaceful people. That's nuts. And that's, I've gotten to the point, man, like the thin blue line lost me. Because for a while I was like, oh, you know, it's just a few cops here and there. Oh, you don't know the whole damn story. There, like the amount of brutality and death and destruction that has occurred since, you know, the 70s and even before then, because of the war on drugs and this just ridiculous persecution of, and, you know, mostly urban areas, which, you know, are heavily, you know, in terms of numbers, obviously people with melanated skin.
Yeah. But
it's also out here in rural America, all the way into the suburbs,
right?
You know, where you have poor neighborhoods who don't know their rights, who don't understand, you know, defense and all that kind of stuff. And they have decided to target. That's just, man, that's a bit, you know, the way it is the entire time I was growing up. And, you know, I hate to say that I was one of those people that was just like, you know, say no to drugs and just, you know, obey the law. And like, it's social decay. Like, that's not you're not permitted. You have rights, and so do they. And if they're not hurting anybody, right? You don't hurt people. You don't take their stuff. You're probably pretty okay in everybody else's book. Like, that's it. Good ideas don't require force.
Absolutely. I say that all the time. And I think that people that think that somebody's going to get high on marijuana and go hurt somebody, I don't think they've ever been around a pothead, do you?
They've never, ever smoked it. I mean, most potheads, you know, like people who actually, you know, smoke on a regular basis, nicest people in the world, some of the smartest damn people I've ever met too, right? Like, because they're open and they're receptive to who they are first and foremost, right? And they had to take some introspection because that's what it does. And then secondly, outside of that, you've got the, you know, the people who are not, you know, users on a regular basis, who maybe are trying it for the first time. What happens the first time you get stoned, man? Like, you're maybe super happy if you're lucky, right? If you're pretty comfortable in your own skin, you have a nice experience. But if you're kind of paranoid or you're dealing with some stuff, that kind of stuff comes out too. And, you know, for those people, man, then what do they want to do? If things are coming out, do you think they want to be around people? No, man, they want to be in a corner in their bed. They want to cry it out a little bit. They want to, they're dealing with things.
Right.
And those type of people, man, when they deal with things, it's more of an introspection. And I've never come across a raging stoner in my life.
No.
Raging alcoholic?
Absolutely.
Every time, right? Like, every time.
Well, and I tell people all the time when it comes to the whole weed thing, we've already got enough laws on the books. If somebody were to hurt somebody else and they were under the influence of anything, just prosecute them the same way you would anybody else. Well,
that's just what it is, right? It's like, hey, man, we got a real simple code. Murder, rape, assault, theft, coercion, vandalism, robbery, and fraud. Like, outside of that, there might be one or two others that I've forgotten. But like, hey, man, if you haven't done that, then leave people alone if you're the Boys in Blue. You got a badge on? Go uphold somebody's rights. You want to be a real hero? Go make sure that people and their private property are safe. Make sure that, you know, that nobody's harassing them about guns and accessories. Make sure that nobody's trying to take their property at the city council or the county commission. Make sure that none of this kind of bullshit is happening on your watch. That's real hero stuff, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a point of knowing their place. As members of the police force, that they are our employees. I think
no servants,
right? They are the public servant, if you will. And so, They work for us. They're supposed to uphold. Their job is to uphold the law. And if you want to talk about the law, what is the law supposed to do? To preserve liberty. Now, obviously, we see abuses of that all the time. And unfortunately, they are the agents that are carrying this out. So it's like, know your place, know your role, and
don't use the damn Nuremberg defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just doing my job. It's a tired old excuse, and I'm done with it. I'm done with it.
Amen, man.
Because I will tell you, it's like what I said, if people try to confiscate guns, who do you think's coming? The police.
It's the police. It's the same people. And that's the thing is, I don't think people understand, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. As long as they're passing legislation and funding police departments and sheriff's departments are going to do what those people are telling them to do, right? So at the end of the day, when the Republicans pass the war on drugs, the cops go, okay, cool. And when the Democrats pass a war on guns, right, they're going to go, okay, cool.
Right.
That's what they do. Why? Because it means more money. And if they don't do it, it means less money.
Right. And would you say, I'll argue this, that if they do try to take guns, if they try something like in Australia and they actually come for the guns, I think that would cause a war.
War. And I hate it, man. Like, that's the last thing I ever want to see, man. I mean, maybe this is a good time to even talk about this kind of shit, because I think we're getting damn so close that people need to understand. Like, I was thinking about this the other night, you know, and what people don't understand about war is just how damn awful and graphic and terrible it is. You're gonna see, like, if this shit goes down, you are going to see people's lives destroyed, and that is top level icing, right? This is, we're still in the sweet part. When you get into the core of what this is, I want people to imagine that, and if you got little kids around, I definitely would say, pause it now. You got 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2. All right. When you imagine war, imagine your neighbor, right? First and foremost, imagine your neighbor's house being ransacked, burned, part of it bulldozed, shot to hell, mortared, you name it. And maybe overnight, right? Like, if they want to set up artillery stations and really go to war, and they want to soften an area up for takeover, that's what they're going to do. It's called target softening, right? Area softening. Before they send in ground troops and all that kind of stuff, they'll do, you know, they'll do area softening. So when they start doing that, imagine shit raining down on your neighborhood all night long, going, oh God, oh God, oh God, like, not right now. Like, and that goes on all night. And then the ground troops and the mech and everything else moves in the next morning, right? And there are going to be a lot of people who don't make it through the night. Now, when those troops get to you and you're still either alive or you're cowering in a hole and you've watched your neighbors or even your family either be destroyed or dying on the spot, and you've got some nervous 17, 18, 19-year-old kid right there on the other end of that trigger who's been told you're a domestic damn terrorist, what is he going to do? Him and his buddies are going to throw anything and everything else they got, whether it's grenades, firearms, the Mark 19, like, whatever they need to do to make sure you're not a threat to them. Now, let's say you live through this hell. What you're going to also see is the aftermath of where these people have been. Those dead bodies that they leave behind, this is going to be real graphic. Those bodies aren't taken care of, right? People that you love, that you know, they are not taken care of by the military. They are not going to be taken care of by people who just live through this kind of thing. What you're going to see is animals, a lot of dogs, going after them, eating them, tearing them apart, and dragging them away to be food. This is what war is. And it is the most awful thing that anybody can imagine. And that's why, like, guys like me, we're sitting here, hey, man, we're begging you guys for peace.
Right.
We don't want to see this shit again. Because I'll tell you right now, man, like, when the vets get off the bench, when this shit has gone too damn far, oh man, it's going to be nasty. Well, it's going to be super awful.
I think that's something that we need to make clear. We are not advocating for war
against
by any stretch of the imagination. I think if someone who has seen war and seen things that I pray to God I never have to see, Shane, you'll be the first person to tell somebody, I don't want this. I don't want this at all. I mean, the thought of it scares the hell out of me, if I'm being blunt.
Yeah, I mean, same here, man. I mean, and that's the thing is you don't know who these guys are. What if they, you know, and it's not outside the possibility for those people to think, hey, you know what? We're going to need international help to subdue these people. What, I mean, do you think, I think that's a real I think that's a real thing, man. I think it's a real thing with these people that I will absolutely call, you know, the bane of human existence. I won't even give them the honor of being traitors, right? Like, they're not our countrymen up there. Like, these people have sold out the American people to the point where they've labeled us as domestic terrorists. They have, you know, put red flags on all of us through social media and everything else. They know who's who. You've probably got a score of some sort. And if you're far enough down that line, man, like, I definitely can see these guys not pulling any punches. They've been preparing for a peer-to-peer or near-peer fight for a long time at the Pentagon. And I don't think that's China. I don't think that's, you know, Russia. I think that's us.
Do you think that a lot of your brothers in arms that are currently serving, do you think that they would go for this?
You know, a lot of the guys that I served with are, you know, retired, man. So right. It's one of those things where, you know, you got a lot of guys who weren't in those early years. And, you know, if they are, they're playing, you know, they're at least playing ball, right? Like, you don't get promoted to the highest ranks, especially in the officer crowd, without playing politics, man. And, you know, those guys are looking for dollars with their next job when they get out, you know, whether it's, you know, a defense organization or as a, you know, some type of contractor or an advisor or whatever it is, right? Like, those are, that's how they're playing ball. They're trying to get as high as they can so that, you know, at the end of the day, their contact list and what they know is something that people are very interested in. And so I think there's a lot of officers that will. I think there's a lot of enlisted men that will not. And I think that, you know, with the dissemination of information and podcasts like this and a bunch of the other ones that are out there, man, I think there's a lot of guys out there who are enlisted who far outnumber the officers that are going to defect in a real hurry. And maybe even, you know, on the way out, make sure that we're not quite as damn outnumbered as we think we are, right? Like, that's my hope, man.
Grab some of those M16s.
or M1s, like the tanks and the Apaches and the Cobras and things like that. Like, grab those on the way out, guys. Like, that's who we need. That's, you know, I'm not saying we can't do it without them. I think we can, but it's one of those things where, yeah, you're right, man. This is not something I want to see, but, you know, I think these guys, man, they're not going to let go of everything real quick. That's, you know, like, they're not going down without a fight. You know, and that's the thing is, I think the best thing that we could understand is they don't know how to handle peaceful people, right? Like, as long as you stay peaceful, they have no idea what to do with you. As soon as you go kinetic, though, and really, I'm talking like really go kinetic in the wrong way, right? Yeah. They're going to make an example. The only reason they didn't make an example out of those people on Capitol Hill is because they were unarmed.
Right.
What are you going to do? I mean, they can paint them into the picture and everything. That was a mob. It wasn't an assault. It wasn't it wasn't a lynching. It wasn't any of those things. It was a mob that's pissed off that went to the source of the problem. And then they freaked out. No, you can't assault you can't mob the cathedral. No, there are some things you can burn private property and people's lives to the ground all summer long. But don't you dare go after these people in the cathedral. You've forgotten your station in life, right?
Well, I think that was something that really pissed me off when I saw, you know, the whole response when you compared the Black Lives Matter stuff, burning down private property, hurting innocent people.
Killing innocent people.
Killing innocent people, destroying businesses. Black-owned businesses, by the way. Black-owned businesses. Yeah, they say Black Lives Matter. But
well, destroying their own neighborhoods. Communities. Yeah.
And, you know, then they want to paint these guys in some kind of different light. You know, and I'm not saying either one is right. I'm not. But I will tell you, that is why I will never, ever, ever stand with a Black Lives Matter organization. I understand what the messaging to the general public is. I agree with a lot of the messaging to the general public. But mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter as an organization is a Marxist organization.
Yeah, trying to destroy the family unit.
Right. And I think a lot of that, people have not understood that. They think that, you know, we're fighting for criminal justice reform. We're fighting for all these things that are horrible things that affect not just the Black community, Black and brown people. They affect all of us. Yeah. You know, so I'll stand with people on that. But I will not stand with a Marxist. I don't care what color he is.
No, and that's the thing, is I'm not here. Like, I'm not here to apologize or be apologetic. I'm not here to compromise to get closer to liberty. We are going to have liberty, or we're going to have death, and that's it. Like, that is the line in the sand here in the state of Georgia, man. Like, I'm done. I talk to people all the time. We're done. We need to find each other, and we need to take a stand. I mean, it's not
solved peacefully.
I think most people will want this resolved peacefully. And I think the people that are even entertaining the idea that they're gonna harass peaceful people beyond what they've already put up with from the damn state governments, right? Like, and let's be, I'm not one of those people that's gonna just be one-sided on it. Like, it was the governors who shut down America.
Oh yeah. Right?
It was the governors and the bureaucrats who shut down America. It was not a disease. It was the governors, right?
Absolutely.
There are people who are at risk. There are, you know, there is awful disease out there every year, not just, you know, this year. I mean, has it added to death tolls? Yeah, it definitely has. But a lot of that's been inflicted by guys like Andrew Cuomo, right? Like, where you put, you know, people who are sick or potentially sick in nursing homes.
Yeah.
That people are done, and rightly so. They've been my take on this is the American people have exercised the patience of saints so far. Yeah. Saints. And I think the spring in America is here. The American spring, you know, I hope it's as peaceful as it can be, but I'm pretty sure people are done. And you know, maybe to Governor Abbott's credit, man, he's one of the first guys out there that says, hey, we're opening up completely. We're done. We're out of this shit.
You've got what, Abbott now, and then Ron or DeSantis?
Yeah, Kristi Noem.
Yeah, and Noem, and that's about it right now. I mean, I know
that's right.
our governor in North Carolina, Roy Cooper, he's a tyrant. I cannot stand that self-conceited bastard. I mean, he looks like an arrogant Dr. Seuss character. I hope he hears this too. You know, just the grimace on his face, the little smirk. And the people of my state are hurting. You know,
yeah. I think a lot of people are, man.
It disturbs me to my core. And for all the problems that I had with President Trump, and believe me, there were many. There were plenty of problems. I could sit and talk about that, but that'd be another show. The way he handled this pandemic, I got to give him credit. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of power seizure there.
Yeah, he was definitely very 10th Amendment on you know, the states, and the states were very Mao. They were very, you know, Stalin, you know, in terms of what they did. Mussolini really comes to mind, like the fascists that have come out of this thing in terms of the corporate government alliance in the box stores, right? Like, what if you ever went into a box store during this time, every 5 seconds, you know, we care about the safety of our employees and our customers. You got to wear, you know, mask, maybe, depends on where you are,
right?
Kind of, you know, right? Like, what about our rights? You know, don't you, as Home Depot, Lowe's, Target, don't you guys care more about our rights than our safety? Because let's face it, man, sometimes liberty is maybe a little scary for people. It's not perfect, but I'll tell you what, it's better than having the state, you know, point guns at peaceful people.
I prefer dangerous liberty over peaceful security. You know, you can't guarantee security. You can't. Life is messy sometimes. And I would rather have the freedom. I would rather have the freedom to operate the way I see fit than for somebody.
Hey, brother.
Somebody tell me,
we got to hit pause, man. I got fire alarms going off in my house right now.
Okay.
2 seconds. I'll be right back.
All right. You get everything worked out?
Yeah. So for those people listening, thanks for bearing with us. I've got a father-in-law who lives with me, and he was doing some baking downstairs and set off the fire alarm. Everybody's good. We're good. So we were talking about the corporate. What's that?
He wasn't making the weed brownies, was he? The pot brownies? It'd
be a lot cooler if he was.
We were talking about the corporate cabal.
Yeah, the government corporate cabal here in America that's, you know, got, you know, roots here and in China now. And, you know, it's a weird thing that these international corporations have so much power and influence. And, you know, the anti-fascists out there, the Antifas, they're not anti-fascist, right? Like, they are very fascist. And fascist, you know, in terms of, yeah, the thing is, they've ushered in an era of fascism here in the United States. Everything in terms of the push through giant corporations out there, you know, in just the entire, you know, government corporate banking cabal as well. It's just like, you know, these guys have pushed and pushed and pushed these arbitrary mandates and everything else from, you know, the heads of the state, all the way down. They've used federal resources like, you know, the CDC and everything like that to lie and manipulate and alter and, you know, basically disenfranchise and divide the American people. It's nuts to see what, you know, these supposed, you know, quote, you know, American, you know, corporations that, you know, came up with America because we, you know, we gave them our business, have done in terms of betraying those people that have, you know, built their companies. It's crazy.
Well, and we don't have a capitalist system in America anymore. Not right now. We haven't had a capitalist system in a long time, you know, and that's something that really gets on my nerves with the socialists. You know, they always want to say, well, true socialism has never been tried. Well, we haven't had capitalism for a very, very long time. So you can't blame capitalism for the market failures because it's not a free market.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing is I don't even like to call it capitalism anymore. Right. Like, I just free trade.
Yeah.
Hey man, is there anybody between me and you, you know, you got some apples. I got some Fiat. Can I trade those? I don't need a third guy in here telling me what we can and can't do.
Right. Cut out the middleman.
That's right. Crazy. Well, hey, maybe a good time to talk about that too. Bitcoin. I'm going to bring that to Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming.
Let's talk about that a bit. What do you think?
I'll tell you right now, if you're not in Bitcoin, get in Bitcoin. Get out of fiat currency. Get as fast as you can get out of it. There may be some, you know, bumpiness along the ride, but I'm telling you right now, after taking this on and learning and studying this, it's about September of last year, man, I'm not even close to an expert. What I've learned in that amount of time has taught me that I need to know more and more and more about my own understanding of, you know, not just of banking, right? Becoming my own bank.
Right.
If you're not your own bank and you don't hold your own assets, whether it's gold or silver or property, you don't own it, right? And that's one of the first and second rules of Bitcoin. Not your keys, not your Bitcoin, right? Like, second rule, not your keys, not your Bitcoin. Same as Fight Club. We don't talk about Fight Club. Rule two, we don't talk about Fight Club.
Uh-huh.
That's like, Bitcoin is a hedge, and there is, for your audience maybe that's new to this kind of stuff, it is a finite. There will only be 21 million Bitcoins ever. And so obviously that means it can't be manipulated. It's decentralized. It is backed up in terms of codes and chains, in terms of your keys, a transaction number, and somebody else's keys that have to be, you know, two-factor authenticated for it to ever happen. Then it's stored into the ledger and hashed out. And once that's part of the blockchain, that doesn't change ever, right? Like, we're talking about really a communications protocol. It is, I definitely recommend a guy named Guy Swan. He runs Bitcoin Audible, super smart guy. And a bunch of other guys, Mike Saylor out there. He knows what he's doing with this kind of stuff. I think he's got, I don't know how many millions of Bitcoin at his disposal already, but it's pretty amazing.
The thing I love about Bitcoin, and admittedly, I don't know very much at all other than it's cryptocurrency, but the thing that I love about it is that it's a threat to government power. You know, you can't.
Oh, it destroys governments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is it will absolutely destroy the initiative of force against peaceful people. Government won't be able to exist. And that's the coolest thing, right? It is like, listen, now what we're talking about is consensual dealings with other people. Because if somebody wants to come and take your Bitcoin, they can't do it. Nobody can take it. States, entire like state organizations have tried to do this all over the world. And they have just run into heartache and consternation because they have been unable to take people's Bitcoin.
Well, tell me, Shane, if I had to ask you, if you had to name like three things, in spite of everything that we've talked about, three things that give you hope for the future, what would they be?
Oh, man, I'll tell you right now. I know a lot of this has been death and destruction. I am extremely hopeful. Blockchain technology will be one and two for sure. I'm going to plug these guys, hiveonboard.com. It's blockchain social media. Okay. And so you can get into blockchain social media. There inside that blockchain social media, there's different social medias, just like, you know, on what I'll call Web 2.0. Web 2.0 is what you have, what everybody's used to using now. Web 3.0 is blockchain internet. So social media is part of that. So there's PeakD, which is like Facebook. There is ThreeSpeak, which is kind of like YouTube. And then there's DBuzz, which is like Twitter, right? And it's in early stages, but the thing is you can monetize on there. They've got their own virtual coin. So you can, you know, obviously collect value for your content there. And it's decentralized. So it can never, ever be deplatformed. That's a really powerful new thing that most people don't know about. It's where I'm going. And then obviously Bitcoin, which I've already talked about. I think those, the ability to communicate ideas and know who people are, and then on top of that trade through consent with people, that's going to destroy the need for governments, man. Like that, like you may have neighborhood watch, but the thing is it's going to be a consensual thing because those guys over there can't come over and take your stuff, right? Like it's just the way it is. Nobody profits from going around and destroying other people, because if you destroy other people, then you're destroying their Bitcoin, and then there's just less, which actually increases the value of your Bitcoin. It's amazing.
Well, the fear of digitization of everything, what would you say to those people? Because I know there are plenty, and I'm like, I don't think it'll be that big of a deal. I really don't.
When you say digitization of everything in terms of like dollars?
Of money, yeah.
Yeah, I was scared of it. I was very skeptical of it until I understood the communications protocol part and the decentralization part and the fact that they could shut down 99.9% of it and it would still exist. The rarity of it, I don't say simplicity, but really it is very simple. And blockchain, like I said, it's a protocol. So it's a communication protocol so that when there is rules, it's the communications protocol that doesn't get changed or can't get changed, right? This is it, man. There's a set number, there are set rules. If it doesn't fit into the zeros and ones, then it doesn't exist. It gets kicked out of the system. It's you know, one of those things that's absolutely decline, you know, and they're very powerful people, like I said, that have tried to go against this. And I guess wrap it up with what is the third thing that I'm very optimistic about, man? I think I'm just very optimistic about the American people. Like I see it, man. And, you know, I've had conversations with neocons. I've had conversations with progressives. I've had Bernie bros, MAGA, you name it, man. And the thing is most people just want to be left alone. We can achieve that. We can agree to some things. And I think there is, you know, I think there is this willingness right now in people that just want to, you know, like at this point, you're just going, okay, I'll settle for this, right? Like I will settle for freedom and for the state doing that over there, right? Like these very basic principled things. We can agree on those things. And outside of that,
what I said about the Black Lives Matter people, I can agree with the things that the organization puts out there as far as messaging, as far as getting the cops off people's back, you know, making them more accountable. Absolutely. You know, but I won't align myself with a Marxist. But
that's
but
right.
On those issues, I can definitely agree, and we can work where we agree and work towards it.
Yeah, I can find common ground, and I'll work on those common ground issues for sure. And I think that's the, you know, that's the easiest thing is like in your areas, right? If you work from common ground and you don't have anybody else incentivizing or subsidizing something, like things change very quickly.
Right.
And that, I mean, the American spirit, man, like there is still this unbridled passion in America. And that's the really neat thing, right? Is like, there are a lot of people who like to play identitarian politics.
Yeah.
And even in those identitarian politics, there's a reason America's ramped up to like 12, right?
Yeah.
It's because we are like a Mustang type nation. We are one of those nations that has hot-blooded individuals who believe fiercely in what they think, right? And at the end of the day, that shines out, and that shines out in passion for each other and passion for their communities and their families. Like that kind of stuff bleeds into society, how we go about achieving those things is the only place where most of us differ. And I will caveat that by saying most people are wrong because they want to point guns at peaceful people,
right?
Like if it's okay, if you think that at any point, if your ideas require a police officer or a federal agent or somebody from the government pointing a gun at a peaceful person to enact your morality, your idea, your legislation, you're wrong.
Yeah. I think that's what it comes down to really is the initiation of force. I love debate. I love, you know, discussing ideas. I think we can find common ground, and I think debate, should be robust. It should be tenuous at times. That's the point of debate. But we should never, ever, ever forget the humanity of the individual. And we have to realize that those people have families too, and that our neighbors are not our enemies. They're not. It's the government.
I agree.
That's the enemy.
Yeah. The people that are living off of your toil and your property and your life and your liberties, that's what they're doing. And they're doing it by force and coercion, man. If there's anybody that's an enemy or a domestic terrorist, it's people who are taking government money.
Oh, and you can throw that in with the government and all the corporations and even the mainstream media. That's why I'm thankful for podcasts like mine and yours and all these other podcasts. You know, I want the decentralization of the media, you know. I want the decentralization of all these platforms like Twitter and what you were talking about before. I think that is a good
opportunity. That's happening.
That can hopefully rise up because, you know, I just started this podcast. I love what I do. But with little guys like me, that they don't want the little guys. They don't want us out there. Why? You know, what gives me hope is because we're a threat. That's why they don't like us. That's why YouTube tries to mess with the algorithm to shove videos like mine down and shove your radical stuff down. And that's why Twitter will mess with our followers like they've done before in the past. It's because they don't want to send the message out.
And
they're scared of us.
That's right.
They are. And I think that should serve as hope. Because I don't care what somebody's ideas are. Censoring ideas never leads anywhere good. And this whole digital book burning and digital banning and all these sorts of things, that will lead you to scary territory. But the idea that we've got them on the run in many ways, more than one. the fact that they're spending all their time and all their energy trying to censor little people, I don't think we're as little as we think we are.
Yeah, there's 300 million of us.
No. And I would say that definitely gives me hope for the future. I would definitely say that people like you, and I'm grateful for what you do. I'm grateful to call you a friend and a brother. And I wish you all the success in the world with the governor race. And
no, I'm absolutely humbled.
Yeah, I thank God that people like you and I have been brought together, that maybe we can shake something up. And
we're gonna. I think we've already hit the hornet's nest. Now it's time to get the blowtorch out and put them out of their misery.
Absolutely, get the flamethrower.
Metaphorically speaking, right?
Yeah. We're not advocating violence.
That's right.
It does my heart good to know that, as discouraged as we can be, that there are many more people, I think, that are willing to be an ally, that are willing to be a friend. And I think we just have to remember the humanity of people. Would you agree with that?
Oh man, I'll tell you right now. I think that's where, you know, and I'm happy to say this. I think that's where the Libertarian Party has missed a lot of opportunity over the years, right? Super duper smart, right? Some of the smartest people in terms of economics, in terms of philosophy, in terms of history, and liberty.
Right.
The problem is we've never been real empathetic. It's been hard for people to meet, you know, in terms of the humanity side. Maybe that's because of our, you know, our autism, our ADD, our Asperger's, you name it, right? But like, listen, when you figure it out and you can be that person that leads, you know, with your heart to people, yeah, and you give them examples and you tell them your story of where you were. I'm telling you right now, man, I've got, you know, I've being an old neocon, right? Like once upon a time, and a hard ass Marine and everything else, as hard as you could be, now to have good friends that used to be huge bleeding heart progressives, you know, we've figured it out, man. Like we figured out how to agree on some very simple things and then leave each other the hell alone. And so that's, I guess, I mean, that bleeds right into number three, is like, listen, you know, we can do a better job with messaging. And that's my goal, is, hey, let's find that common ground with our hearts and then let's work on it. Let's work from there. Because if we can start with a premises and a principle, that's the bedrock that this nation is going to be built on.
Right. And principled. Principled, peaceful people who love each other. I mean, I think that's something that people don't put enough emphasis on, is true love. And it doesn't mean that we have to agree with each other on everything. Mm-hmm. Love doesn't mean that we have to agree ideologically all the time, but that we never forget each other's humanity and that we respect that, and that we try to understand the best that we can. You know, our ideas will come out on top as long as we remember each other's humanity and that we're all people, we all bleed red, and even when it's tenuous, we're Americans. We're known for that. When the chips are down, we deal with things. And all the triumphs that I've seen throughout our history have been from the people, not from government. And that truly is what gives me hope. I would say, as we wrap this up, is there any last things that you would like to say to the viewers and listeners of my podcast? Is there anywhere they can reach you? How can they get in touch with you to help you out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always happy to plug that. If you want me to do Liberty full time instead of doing it as a hobby, might be kind of crazy. I don't know. You might not even know what you're asking for, but you can go to patreon.com/radicalpod. And that's really where I get paid for what I do in the Liberty movement, which is not, you know, extremely prosperous, right now, but I think it's about to change here, as the tides are shifting. And then, I mean, really, if you want to bring something to my attention, ask me questions, anything like that, you can find, you can send me an email at Shane@radicalpod. If you're interested in watching, on Wednesday this week, 8 p.m. Eastern, I am debating the Catholic University of America's Republican or College Republicans. And
I saw that. That's going to be interesting.
Oh, it's going to be fun, man. And the thing is like, listen, you know, they think maybe I'm coming in there to be contentious. Well, I'm going to be, but I'm also going to be super nice. And at the end of the day, I'm going to make them a bet, right? I'm going to make them a bet. If I can prove you guys are progressives, you all have to become libertarians. By the end of that, man, I'm going to take them all up on it. If I can prove you're progressives and that you and you're all for the state, you got to become libertarians.
Oh boy, I cannot wait to see that. I encourage you guys to check that out. If you want to see something good, this man can debate. I'm sure that he's going to mop the floor with the ideology, not the people. He'll be a nice asshole if there is such a thing.
Hey, at least I'm an asshole that'll fight for your rights to do whatever the hell you want in your life, as long as you're peaceful, right?
Right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with me, brother. It's always a pleasure. And that's it, guys. Well, we'll see you in the next episode of Revolution's Revival. I've been your host, Caleb Shoemate, and I've had Shane Hazel on with me.
Go out there and throw. Go ahead. Go out there and throw Caleb some bones too, man. Like, I can't wait for you to do huge things, man. It's good finally talking to you again. I know it's been crazy, and I'm honored. I love you as a brother. Thank you so much for giving me this platform.
I love you too, man. I'm glad to do it. I'll be glad to do it in the future too when you become the next governor of Georgia.
And disband the state.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you guys for listening.